Welcome to the program for Thursday, May 10th, 2012 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thursday in the 3 o'clock hour is Industry Chatter. And my guest on the program today is Tor Opsahl. He is the Executive Vice President at CCSI. And Tor, it's great to have you in the studio. Thanks for being here today.
Francis, glad to be here.
Tell me what your company does for federal clients.
All right, so CCSI today fundamentally are in two or three lines of business with the federal government. Program management support has typically been our strong suit, and it's been the genesis of the company. And we continue to provide program management support primarily to Homeland Security. From that support, we have developed also a strong line of business in cybersecurity information assurance, which we again do for Homeland Security and DOD. From that, we have leveraged that into the area of biometrics and identity management. And then we also tend to help some of our clients now with strategic planning, looking at technologies down the road, helping them engineer the next generation of systems that they're going to use. So that's sort of what we do here for, you know, most of our business.
That's an area in particular, that last line of business is an area in particular that agencies are struggling with because, as we talked about a little bit before we went on the air, especially technology professionals at agencies are so focused on saving money and how do I do that through the next budget cycle that long-term planning is not a thing of the past entirely, but not nearly as common as it has been or as agencies would probably like it to be.
I think that's absolutely true. So I think the environment we're faced with here is we have a budget-constrained environment. The challenges aren't getting any smaller. If anything, they're growing. So what we have to do here, I think, is we have to perhaps start to think about the business in different ways and start to look at the way we're doing things differently. We can't continue to conduct business as usual for a number of reasons, okay? One is technology is moving incredibly fast. You know, we were just talking a little bit about too, but the technology cycle is less than a year, maybe 6 months. The government's in a position where they typically have to make long-term commitments. So you're struggling here with an environment where you need to be very agile and cost conscious, and then you have the government organization, which is a large behemoth that, you know, has difficulties on moving quickly. So it's a challenge, and I agree that and long-term planning is hard, and we have to find ways in which we can be nimble and help the government move on a 6, 12, 18-month schedule.
The vendors are expressing a lot of interest in wanting to help the agencies do that. But I'm reminded, as I think about what you're saying, of a couple of days ago, shared services strategy memo comes out. Agencies are given instructions to do that. And my colleague Jason Miller mentioned that the deadline for the next deadline for shared services is is coincidental with the beginning of work on the FY 2014 budget requests.
Right.
So how is it possible for agencies to be as nimble as the vendors would be able to help them be when I'm sitting here in the middle of 2012 thinking about a budget that will go into effect a year and a half from now if Congress gets around to doing it?
Well, you know, there are a couple of things. I'm going to date myself here a little bit, but in the old days in this marketplace, procurements tended to be winner-take-all, and you get a nice long-term five-year contract, and that's kind of how it worked. Today, you know, the agencies have access to pretty much the entire federal complement of contractors through the multiple award GWAC contracts, which does on paper give them the ability to move quickly and change quickly. However, what we've seen lately is the procurement cycles are getting longer for whatever reasons. Everybody's more cautious. There are more reviews, especially in DOD and places like Homeland Security. So even though they have the tool here, it's very hard to implement that tool in this environment. Okay. So I think, however, one of the things that from our side we'd like to see more of is more communication directly with the government. Now, again, in the old days, it was pretty easy. You know, the security was less, and you could pretty much walk around government buildings and talk to government folks. You can't do that anymore. Everything has to be formal now. And we understand that government people get inundated with, you know, requests from companies that want to come and talk to them. But I think more dialogue, more communication, more generation of ideas is something that, you know, we should work on both sides of the fence, in both industry and government, because ideas, I think, is what we're going to need here going forward in this marketplace.
Dan Gordon started the Mythbusters campaign before he left OFPP. Leslie Field announced the second phase of that, the vendor phase of it, on Monday. What is your sense of how those concepts have done at facilitating better communication? Are you starting to see any of that trickle down yet to the agency vendor level?
I think we are. I mean, I think we are. Agencies are coming up with initiatives to reach out more, to have a broader interface, and I think that's all helpful. And I think we just need to keep doing more of it, because by doing that, you might have 10 ideas and two may be the winners, you know, and that's sort of what we need to do here.
What are you seeing the agencies doing to drive that? You mentioned initiatives, and you don't need to name particular agencies if you don't want to, but I'm just curious at what's facilitating that.
They do industry days, one-on-ones, white papers. I mean, we're actually seeing a trend now where more agencies are open to looking at white papers. So we give them a concept, they'll take a look at it, you come in and talk about it. Mm-hmm. So they do try, I mean.
The getting around the concept of favoring one vendor over another seems to be the big holdup in that. Are there tools that you think agencies maybe could take advantage of that they're not, that would open that dialogue up a little bit more?
Boy, that's an interesting question. I actually, the way I would look at that is, I tend to think that the playing field has leveled in the last couple of 3 years, just because of what's happened with budgets and challenges and everything. And so I see in a lot of cases now a playing field that's more level than it's ever been, actually, without, and I think the market has kind of driven that. Yeah, is it true that in some places and some agencies and some corners they have a preference for certain vendors? Sure. But I think that's just part of the market dynamic, you know, and in a sense, it's up to us, the other companies, to get in there and show them that we can be more creative and more competitive than the next guy. I think that's a healthy thing.
The level of competition is increasing, and a phenomenon that I'm hearing a lot about is that companies are competing against bigger companies that they didn't expect to for a long time, where companies, some of the big guys are stepping down a notch or maybe two to go after business that they wouldn't have even sniffed at a couple of years ago. Are you seeing that?
Absolutely. Everybody is hungrier. The dollars are, you know, fewer than they have been. The big companies on the marketplace, the CSEs and the HPs and the Lockheed Martins, they'll compete for a $2 or $3 million job, and they wouldn't have looked at that years ago. So that may be the bad news in some sense. But on the other hand, I always think that medium-sized companies like CCSI or even small businesses, we have some advantages that we can use, okay? So I don't think we should be afraid of having to compete with the large companies. The issue is, if we try to compete with them on their terms, like try to show we have the same resources, well, no, we can't do that. We don't have, 10,000 engineers sitting in the back room, but we have ideas, and we can be flexible, and we can be nimble, and we can be easier to work with, and all those things. So you're right. I mean, the big guys are competing for the same dollars we are, but I don't think that's a bad thing. I actually think that's a good thing.
A couple concepts there I want to follow up on when we come back from the break. My guest is Tor Opsahl of CCSI on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
Staying focused on your mission requires making smart decisions and mitigating unnecessary risks. That's why many agencies turn to GSA. With unparalleled experience in acquisition and financial compliance and technical expertise, GSA makes it easy for federal civilian and military customers to maintain mission focus and enhance program performance by adding value. With trained professionals in contracting, financial, and program management, GSA stands ready to help execute large-scale and/or complex and/or sensitive IT and professional services services projects while maintaining seamless compliance with today's tough mandates. With GSA, you gain a trusted partner to ensure delivery promises are kept on time, on budget, and at best value. To learn how GSA can help, call 703-605-3699. That's 703-605-3699. Or visit gsa.gov/AAS. That's gsa.gov/AAS. GSA, providing custom solutions to your complex requirements.
This is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For over 133 years, AFMA has proudly served the U.S. Armed Forces community. We're more than just great life insurance for the military family. We're your guide through life's challenges by offering the right products at the right time for the best price. Our Survivor Assistance Services team provides compassionate and caring advice and assistance for your family at a most critical time. At AFMA, we understand the many challenges that military families can face during their service and after the loss of a loved one. As a nonprofit membership association, AFMA always focuses on what's best for you. That means offering the best prices on life insurance for all military personnel and the best services for survivors. And it also means offering policies with no war or aviation clauses. For a free life insurance quote, call a membership coordinator at 1-877-398-2263 or visit us online at AFMA.com. That's AAFMAA.com.
To win and deliver government health care contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Moreover, with over 900 health care IT initiatives proposed in the 2013 federal budget, you need to begin building your health care IT teams now. Meet Tech Systems. Every year, Tech Systems deploys thousands of IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems Government Services offers a dedicated healthcare division to deliver practical healthcare IT solutions to the federal, state, and local government. No matter where you are on your meaningful use journey, Tech Systems can guide you through the transition, from providing managed services that tailor end-user training by role and workflow, to providing BI solutions that get you closer to your quality care goals. Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at TechSystems.com, TekSystems.com.
I'm Emily Cuff. Coming up on tomorrow's Federal Drive, an irate lawmaker criticizes the IRS for sending employees to a conference at the Ritz-Carlton in Miami. But it's just the latest chapter in Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley's battle with the agency. We'll have lots more, too, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My industry chatter guest today is Tor Opsahl, Executive Vice President at CCSI. A couple of the things that you mentioned toward the end of the last part of our conversation, I want to follow up on. You talked about being nimble, demonstrating value, and some other elements there. And those all are very desirable qualities in an environment where demonstrating best value is what the agencies are really looking for. I'm hearing more and more that agencies are putting out RFPs, and even if they don't explicitly say we're looking for the best price, they're looking for the best price. How do you compete in that environment in some of the ways that you're talking about against some of the bigger players in an environment where you are trying to compete against somebody with 10,000 engineers sitting in the back room, as you mentioned?
Well, it is definitely true that I think you're seeing more selections be based on low price, even if they say best value. And to some degree, it's a function of the fact that the RFPs that the government are putting out have tend to be, watered down might be too strong a word, but they require less of a technical response in many cases than they used to in the past. So you're faced with the situation where you might get half a dozen bids. Three bids are going to be very close technically, so there's no real discriminator here. And therefore, price becomes the thing you go to because it's clear cut. It's black and white. You know, one company bids $100. The other company bids $90. The technical is about the same. You go with a $90 bid. So there's no question that that's a trend. However, there are clearly agencies and customers here that genuinely would make a best value selection. And I think it is up to us on the contractor side to perhaps get more creative. Look, you know, we live in pretty tough times right now. We got to get more creative, use technology more creatively, look at things differently. And I think it's incumbent upon us to kind of, you know, come up with those ideas, put those in our proposals, and try to offer that to the government. So, you know, I think that as a federal contractor, you have some responsibility here, and I think that's part of our responsibility.
It sounds like your take on it is that some competitions that don't start out as price-based competitions wind up that way,
yes.
Kind of de facto,
yes.
Because that's the direction that it's easier both for the agencies and the vendors to go
right.
in.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes, in perfect sense. That's what happens more often than not. But in the long run, maybe that's not what we should be aiming for. Maybe we truly should be aiming for the better ideas, the creative ways of doing things, the new ways of looking at the business. You know, in a sense, we have a system here that's been almost the same since the Second World War. But the world has changed in a lot of different ways, including, you know, the federal marketplace now. And looking down the pike, we know that budgets are going to be tight. We know the challenges out there are going to grow, and so we may have to adapt the way we do business, really.
It strikes me that that's one of those places there, though, where when companies are scrambling for dollars as much as they are, mm-hmm. they're going to be content to let the other guy go first when it comes to innovation and continue to play it safe because they understand yeah. kind of how the game works and what the rules are.
Sure, but one of the things I suspect – that we might see some kind of an industry shakeout in the federal marketplace over the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years because it's more competitive. And when you have a lot of competition, you know, there's some people will rise to the top and some won't. So I suspect we might see a shakeout, and we may end up with a marketplace with fewer competitors in the next 3, 4, 5 years. But the ones that survive and prosper are going to be the ones that really have been able to adapt, have been able to look at things differently and say, hey, you know, we've been doing it this way for 15 years, but you know what? This is the way forward, okay? So I don't know that, but that's my feeling that we'll see some kind of shakeout here as we go forward.
Okay? That's interesting because I talk to a lot of people in industry that talk about not exiting the federal marketplace, but certainly trying to drive a lot more of their effort and their business development toward their commercial books mm-hmm. of business.
Yeah, and, you know, the challenge with that is I think for the large companies – you know, that probably works. For a small company to go from the federal marketplace to commercial, it's not an easy transition. It's a different business model. The marketing is different. The BD is different. The rules are different, you know. So some companies can do it, but it's not an easy transition, I think, for small and mid-sized companies.
The one thing that I'm wondering about in the model that you're talking about is – agencies say over and over again, we want to see innovation. We want different creative ideas. And yet, as you mentioned, they wind up kind of falling back on the models that they've been using time
right.
and time and time again. How do you – what's the intersection of those two things? Or are they on parallel tracks? Is there going to be really hard to get to cross?
Well, you know, innovation would generally be viewed obviously as a good thing. But there's also risk attached to innovation, right? You know, if you get a new idea and you're looking and say, should I do this or not? Some people will say, okay, I'll take the risks. Some won't. So I really think part of this goes back to communication. You know, if the first time a government customer sees a new idea is in a written proposal, I think that's not what should happen. There should have been dialogue. So when it shows in the proposal, there's some comfort level, there's been some discussion, and they sort of have an understanding, yeah, you know, this is a good idea. We can do this. So I think communication is the key thing, and I think that's how you can sort of, you know, arrive at an intersection here, to be honest.
And that goes back to what we talked about in the first segment about the communication
right.
early on in the process and the whole Mythbusters
yeah.
back and forth amongst the...
Yeah, and nobody has a monopoly on good
yeah.
ideas. You know, different companies, different people, the government people. I mean, but I think we need some good ideas here to kind of, change our business a little bit.
I know what you'll say about your own company, but overall, how do you think industry is doing at educating decision makers inside the agencies just about what the possibilities are so that when you get further down the road to requirements and an RFP and so on, they're aware of all the potential things that they could see?
I think we do a decent job, but I think we can do better in the following sense. In order to get the government's customer to listen to you, they have to believe that you're talking about things that would really benefit them. And I think sometimes in the industries that we get ahead of us, as we're going in there with some sales pitch, and it's not what they want to hear. They have 10 problems they have to solve, okay? And what they want to hear is, hey, can you help solve this problem? And how can you do it? And is there a way that, we can get this done? Mm-hmm. So I think we do a decent job, but I think we can do better by sometimes maybe kind of setting aside the sales pitch and just focusing on what the problem really is.
It's funny that you say that. I moderated a panel on Monday at an ACT-IAC small business conference, and Roger Baker was on the panel. Okay. And Roger said that to all the small business people. He said the question that I asked him was, how can small business more effectively do business with agencies right. like yours? And he said, be aware of what we need instead of what you have. And as he said it, and I saw people in the audience go, yeah, that makes sense. And I thought there are some big businesses that could stand to hear that same advice. And yeah. So it's interesting to me to hear you say pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, and the way you have to think about it, I think, is the problems that these agencies have aren't their problems. They're actually our problems. We're all taxpayers, right? So these agencies are trying to fix things that should benefit all of us. So it's in our interest, I think, to go forward and communicate and try to be add as much value as we possibly can.
Tor Opsahl is the Executive Vice President of CCSI, my guest on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment.
This week's Experts in Health topic is Detecting Dementia, featuring Dr. David Lipps, Chief of Neurology with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group in Northern Virginia.
My patients often ask me, how to identify the warning signs of dementia? Dementia is not a specific disease, but rather a group of symptoms that reflect a gradual decline in brain function, including memory and thinking skills that are severe enough to interfere with day-to-day activities. While the symptoms of dementia can vary, the key defining features are significant decline in short-term memory, planning and reasoning skills, difficulties with language and attention. Some warning signs of dementia may include difficulty remembering what was said moments earlier or asking the same questions repeatedly, problems completing familiar tasks, repeatedly losing one's sense of direction or losing train of thought in mid-sentence. Speak with your family physician or a neurologist if you identify any of these signs, as treatments now exist to help several causes of dementia.
Dr. Lipps was recognized as a top doctor in Northern Virginia Magazine. To learn more about Kaiser Permanente, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
Are you ready for the federal telework and workforce mobility initiatives? Hi, I'm Amy Rock with the federal sector of VCE. VBlock infrastructure platforms with VMware View provide a fast, proven path to desktop virtualization. Industry-leading security ensures that your employees can safely access information whenever, wherever, on whatever device they're using, from laptops to smartphones. By integrating technologies from Cisco, EMC, and VMware, VCE delivers high availability, exceptional performance, and almost unlimited scalability in a world-class converged infrastructure, so you can ensure your employees remain connected and productive in the face of bad weather, disasters, or just their kid's soccer game.
Federal telework and workforce mobility are changing the way people work. VCE can speed implementation, providing everything you need to reap the rewards of improved productivity and better retention, while staying on top of ever-increasing cost, compliance, and performance demands. For more, visit vce.com/federal.
By combining HP 3PAR utility storage with HP ProLiant Gen 8 servers powered by the latest Intel Xeon processors, you can lower your total cost of ownership and improve project ROI. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how HP can power your data center into the future. Call GovConnection's experienced federal team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
A Grieving Heart, from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. A study of 2,000 people hospitalized for heart attacks finds the psychological stress of losing a loved one can increase heart attack risk. At Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston, Elizabeth Mostofsky and her collaborators say heart attack symptoms should not be dismissed as a harmless response to grief. Mostofsky says,
bereaved individuals and their family and friends should be aware of this heightened risk to make sure that the bereaved person takes care of him or herself. It may indicate that the person is indeed having a heart attack and should seek immediate medical attention.
She also says,
the risk of having a heart attack was 21 times higher in the 24 hours following the loss of a loved one compared to other times.
The study in the journal Circulation was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Are you prepared to detect, stop, or respond to a terror attack? Counter Terror Expo U.S. is coming to the Convention Center May 16th and 17th. Hear insights and workable solutions from expert security, defense, and law enforcement speakers. Collaborate across all sectors on critical issues. Explore and test the latest technology on the free expo floor. Don't miss the opportunity to network with the counterterror community at the most relevant counterterror event of the year. Get more information at counterterrorus.com. That's counterterrorus.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Industry chatter today in the 3 o'clock hour with Tor Opsahl, Executive Vice President of CCSI. We talked in the last segment about connecting with the problems that agencies have and providing solutions to them rather than going in and just selling them whatever solutions you have in your portfolio. How do you recommend that somebody try to do that? What is it that you do, without giving away your trade secrets, of course, to try to understand what an agency's up against and what they're trying to do in that time frame that you have before RFPs and so on, to really be able to communicate with that customer?
So you have to do your homework here, okay? So you have to start with, you know, the information that's available on the programs, the specifics of the programs, the goals. And, you know, a lot of that is available. You don't actually have to go talk to the government people to get that. It's available, generally speaking. And then, you know, you need to get an understanding of things like technology issues, significant milestones in the program that they have to meet. And then you sort of look at that, and then you say, well, is that something that, you know, we really think we can help with? And if so, how can we help them, you know? But it's all about doing your homework, I think. The worst thing I think you do is you go to a customer and you don't understand what programs they're involved in, what challenges they have, you know, what pressures they're under. And essentially it's a waste of both sides' time at that point.
Do you get a sense that a lot of that still goes on?
I think too much. It's my sense. Okay, there's probably too much. And it's, you know, something I think that generally as industry we can do a better job of. Do your homework. Everybody's busy. You know, you're working with agencies like Homeland Security. You're talking about, you know, complicated problems here. So we should all do our homework and make sure that when we, in a sense, get an opportunity to talk directly to the government people, that we really understand what their issues are and what they're up against and how we can help. And we try to do that at CCSI.
You said something during the break that I thought was interesting. You said federal employees aren't encouraged to take risks. Now, I'm not going to claim that's a groundbreaking statement. I've heard it before. But in the context that we talked about it during the commercial break, we were talking about some of the innovation issues that we touched on earlier. What exists to potentially change that in your mind, to create an environment where someone will say, hey, good on you for trying a different approach, looking at it a different way, whatever?
Well, there's probably no magic answer to that, and we've definitely seen in the customer base that we deal with initiatives where employees get rewarded for doing differently, being creative, and all that kind of stuff. So I think it's like everything else. Recognition for trying to do something, even if it didn't necessarily, you know, turn out the way you expect, is important. I think a recognition that if you don't fail occasionally, you're probably not pushing hard enough, okay, is important. And I also think that, you know, there are ways you can mitigate risk. When you look at a solution and an innovation, there are always risk mitigation approaches that you can build into that. So there are things that can be done, I think, to mitigate the downside and make it less onerous in a sense, you know, and offer that value, but also make sure that when somebody tries to do something, hey, we should recognize that and say, as you said, good on you, okay, you know.
There are a number of stats now, portfolio stat and tech stat and so on. Are those sessions and those reviews at the OMB level, do you think, helpful in helping agencies understand their risk, mitigate risk, and drive innovation so that agencies can follow more closely and have a level of accountability more closely for what they're trying to get done?
They're probably helpful at the high level, but a lot of things that can be done, you know, at much lower levels, okay? And so somehow you need to make the things that OMB deal with sort of trickle down into the organization and down to the appropriate levels, which it may be harder than we think sometimes.
I mentioned Roger Baker and his PMAS effort is right. Kind of the basis for the TechStat sessions. Is that what you have in mind when you're thinking about something like that, where there he delegates to folks to look at some of these and it goes down at lower level to lower level to lower level?
And PMAS is maybe a good example here because if you're doing business with the VA and you're working in certain areas, then PMAS is sort of your framework. And if you understand that framework, then, you know, there are checkpoints in PMAS to help you mitigate risk, manage risk, make sure that you don't get too far off course before there is a course correction. Yeah, so, yeah.
My sense is that what he was going for and what he looks like he's achieved is you know pretty much at any time where you're supposed to be, and so it's really difficult unless you really are screwing up to get too far off course.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of merit here in the chunking up of programs and development efforts and so on. You know, we used to sort of go for the big bang, the five-year program, whatever, and we'd work on something for 5 years, and they say, oh, did we get what we wanted? Now, you know, it's 3 months, 6 months, and I think there's a lot of merit to that, okay? Because in a sense, that's the way technology moves too. Technology is moving on that cycle. So if you have a program that's sort of structured that way, you may have a better opportunity of bringing fresh new technologies into the program as you go along, as opposed to be locked into something for 5 years, you know. So.
But a critic of that system would say, well, it causes vendors to always be looking over their shoulders, because if it doesn't go exactly the way the agency wants it, or if they decide they don't like you, they can just blow you out and bring somebody in to continue the next phase of the project.
I think that's sort of capitalism, you know, to be perfectly honest. I think that goes with the territory. I mean, yeah, sure, but, you know, if the other side of that, you better make sure you do a good job so that doesn't happen.
Tor Opsahl is Executive Vice President of CCSI, my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in a minute on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Attention federal employees. Are you a new manager looking to develop your leadership skills, or a senior leader preparing to join the senior executive service? If so, the George Washington University Center for Excellence in Public Leadership can help prepare you. With more than 15 years of experience providing professional development to federal government employees, they understand the challenges you face as a public leader. The center's variety of courses geared to specific GS levels will help you enhance your abilities and advance your career. And with a full schedule of classes offered year-round, you are sure to find a date and time that is convenient for you. For more information or to register for a course, please visit leadership-programs.org. That's leadership-programs.org, or call 202-994-9522. That's 202-994-9522.
The much-anticipated Roth option for the Thrift Savings Plan rolls out this week, but some federal employees will have to wait months to enroll in the new retirement savings plan. Upgrades to agency payroll systems are delaying implementation for some feds. FederalNewsRadio.com has all the information you need to know about the Roth option. Go to FederalNewsRadio.com to find out when you can enroll, plus five things all feds should know about the Roth TSP. Find it at FederalNewsRadio.com. Search Roth TSP.
As a manager, you need to know how you can make your organization more efficient. Listen for Management Friday on Federal News Radio. We bring you information on the keystone of success for any agency or business. Friday mornings at 10, listen for AFGE's perspective on inside government. Next at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dort to hear what career options may be available. Management Friday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500. AM. Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Tor Opsahl. He's Executive Vice President of CCSI, in with me for Industry Chatter today. Now, we've talked a lot about the procurement process. Once the deal is done and somebody's trying to actually develop something, get something accomplished to fulfill the mission of the agency, tell me about some of the challenges that you're seeing inside agencies and program management, some of the things that they ask you for advice on and to help them with, and some of the things that you're seeing agencies do well when it comes to program management.
Okay, so, I think the role here of the program management contractors is to truly act as an honest broker with the government people. And provide the best advice and counsel that we can to get the best value out of the program dollars that they're spending. And as we know, those dollars are shrinking, generally speaking. So we have to be smart now and work with our government clients and see how we can figure out ways to save them money by being more efficient, more productive, more creative. And I'd have to say that, in a lot of agencies, the government people are doing a good job, I think. They're looking at everything that's going on. They're trying to eliminate redundancies, redundant programs. They're trying to say, well, and this is part of our job too, which activities do we absolutely have to do and which do we not have to do, okay? The other thing that I think is important with respect to program management is, when we have programs that don't go right, it's frequently not because of technology or technical ability. It's because of the overall management ability, and sometimes maybe we take on programs that are just too complex. But the fact is that in order for a program to be successful, you need to have strong program management. And I think on the industry side, we can bring in expertise to complement the expertise they have. And it sort of works. One of the challenges for government, of course, is the ability to bring in people, in some cases bring in enough people, bring in the right people. And so one of the values that we bring in our side is we can probably do that, more efficiently and more easily than they can in many cases. So we can help with the tight dollars. We can help with the staff. We can be the honest broker and give them the best advice we can on how to get the most out of the tax dollars. Really.
What are you seeing the agencies doing well when you're going in and working with them?
I think they are doing a good job of adapting their program dollars to some of the new political directions. I think they are doing a good job of eliminating things that, we don't have to do that, okay? We can stop doing that. I think they're doing a good job of actually managing and getting the most out of their people,
One of the things that I hear from time to time is that agencies are spending more time not necessarily and no opinion about whether they're doing it better or not, but spending more time developing business cases for some of the things that you're talking about, where you're trying to really evaluate, is this something we need to do? Is this something that's mission critical? Or is this a nice to do and maybe isn't going to make the cut?
I think that's true. And I think that doing business cases is a good thing. Sometimes when you do a business case, you know, you actually may get a surprise or two. Okay, and you say, oh, you know what? We don't have to do this, or we don't have to do it that way. And mm-hmm. So I see more of that too. Okay.
As far as when your teams go into an agency and you're going to get to work on something, what do you find? What's the state of the art when it comes to program management right now?
Well, the state of the art, that's an interesting question. So what we find, actually it's a mixed bag. What you find is that some places they have the processes and the procedures and the tools are there. They've been using them and it's working. In a sense, you mentioned PMAS, although PMAS isn't strictly a program management, it's a framework, okay, and it's kind of being applied. Other places, they are in a position where, hey, we need program management support. We need the processes. We need the discipline. We need the tools. And that's an opportunity for us to bring that in. So there's a pretty broad range here. Some agencies are much stronger than others, I would say.
Overall, the agencies that are struggling, what are they struggling with?
I think they are really struggling with trying to plan and manage your programs in an environment that's uncertain. You know, none of us can predict the future here, you know, and we have an election year and who knows. But we basically have a lot of uncertainty. And so I think for the agencies, that makes it pretty tough at times, you know. They're you know, when they are in a position where they can't make commitment to the contractors, it's not because they don't want it, it's because they just can't. I think the whole uncertainty is pretty tough.
It's a great point. I had an agency CIO say to me not too long ago, the only certainty that I have is uncertainty.
Right.
I'm pretty sure I'm not going to have a budget on October 1st, right. But I don't know when I'm going to have one. I'm pretty sure that my budget's going to be smaller in 13 than it was in 12, but I don't know how much smaller. And the same thing in 14, it'll be smaller than it will be in 13, but I don't know how much smaller. Yep. So that's...
I think it's hard.
Yeah, that fits with what right. seems like you're seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's a tough job sometimes. And the CIOs have a tough job in general, you know, I'd say across the government.
One of the things that I'm seeing is less opportunity for them to think long term. Mm-hmm. And it fits with what we talked about earlier about contracting, too, where in many cases we're looking at what's the best deal we can get on this today, not thinking much about life cycle. Can you foresee a time 2-5 years out where people pull back and say, you know, we really didn't do the best that we could have for ourselves by going cheap in 12 and 13 and 14, where maybe we're spending a lot more money now than we would have had to if we would have been more mindful of life cycle?
I'm pretty sure we'll see some of that. You know, it'll be an uneven picture, but I remember one of my very first government customers said something which I've always remembered. And he said, Tory said, look, there is frequently not enough money to do things right the first time, but there's always enough money to do things twice. And, you know, I think we're going to see some of that, okay? Where and how much, who knows?
Tor Opsahl is my guest. He's Executive Vice President for CCSI. And we'll wrap up our conversation on Industry Chatter in just a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Recently, United Healthcare was selected to serve the families in the TRICARE West region, and we want those who we will serve to know more about us. United Healthcare is part of a company of over 115,000 people, serving over 75 million Americans nationwide. Our people work hard to be a trusted healthcare partner for all of our members, and we're proud of our track record of quality service. The American Medical Association ranks us number one in claims processing accuracy among the 7 leading commercial health insurers for 2011. J.D. Power & Associates names us number one in its employer satisfaction survey. And Fortune magazine has named us its most admired health insurer 2 years in a row. As provider for the members of TRICARE West, our people will work every day to put our unmatched provider network, industry-leading innovations, and passion for service to work for you. We are United Healthcare. And for us, the chance to help military families isn't just a job. It's an honor. United Healthcare.
The Department of Defense update is brought to you by ITT Excellus.
The winners of this year's Commander-in-Chief's Annual Award for Installation Excellence are out. The winners are Fort Stewart and Hunter Army Airfield in Georgia, the Marine Corps Air Ground Combat Center in 29 Palms, California, Davis-Monthan Air Force Base in Arizona, the Defense Logistics Agency's Defense Distribution Depot San Joaquin in California, and Naval Air Station Jacksonville in Florida. The Pentagon says the awards recognize the work of people operating and maintaining military installations.
What is the power of ingenuity? It's integrated logistics support and sustainment solutions. It's collaborating with the U.S. Army in equipment maintenance and regeneration support. It's providing military installations worldwide with total base and infrastructure operating and maintenance services. It's space, ground, and range support services, and it all comes from ITT Excellus. Visit exelisinc.com. That's exelisinc.com. Excellus, the power of ingenuity.
Looking for a professional master's degree that will take your career to the next level? The University of Maryland's Master's in Applied Economics can help you gain a valuable professional advantage and expand your career opportunities. Meet faculty and get your questions answered at the next information session, May 23rd at 6:30 p.m. in the Ronald Reagan Building in downtown D.C. Application deadline is June 1st. Details at masters.econ.umd.edu.
Join FCA Bethesda in congratulating the 2012 Government-Wide Initiatives Excellence Awards recipients. Winners include Mary Armstead, NIH Acquisition Award, Ron Graham, HHS Health IT Award, and Jack Bates, VA Big Data Award, as well as category winners from GSA, EPA, DOJ, and other government agencies. If you'd like to get involved with FCA Bethesda, go to fciabethesda.org for more information. That's FCABethesda.org.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Tor Opsahl. He is the Executive Vice President at CCSI. My guest on Industry Chatter today on In Depth with Francis Rose. We just have a few minutes left, and I appreciate you being here today. I've enjoyed our conversation greatly, Tor. What do you see? We talked about the fact that it's difficult for decision makers at agencies to really pull back and think about long-term stuff. And we also talked about the uncertainty piece of this. Given all that, what do you see that might be at least themes to think about in that 2 to 5 year time frame for somebody that's in a leadership position at an agency?
I think you have to think about that in terms of a couple of different things. One is you have to look at how are you going to utilize your human capital. I mean, after all, people are still really important. And I think every agency head is going to need to take a look at how I utilize my human capital most effectively. The second thing is they need to look at technology and what impact technology is going to have. And, you know, it's funny, but think about the phones we carry with us today. I mean, probably every week or month there's an update to some application that you carry on your phone. So the time scale is really short when it comes to that stuff. But going back to what I said maybe 40 minutes ago, technology in general is moving very quickly. So an agency has to look at that and see how they can get the benefit of that, along with how they utilize their human capital. And I think those two things are going to be really important. Now, we also need to look at the procurement side and how they do procurements. You know, in a sense, what's happened is that procurements take longer now for whatever reason. And we need to find a way to bring procurement cycles back to where they used to be, and preferably even shorter than that, you know, because I think without agile procurements, you can't have agile agencies. So I think that's an important thing.
You dated yourself earlier, so I'm not dating you by mentioning this, but you have been in this market for a fair amount of time. Is what we're seeing today, some of the things that you're seeing, are these things repeating themselves, or are we at a kind of an evolutionary point in this market, do you think?
I think we are at an evolutionary point. Some things, yeah, we've seen some things before, but I think we can't ignore the fact that budget money is a bigger issue than it ever was. I mean, you know, there used to be the days where we could just throw money at things and that would somehow fix the problem. The reality is we're not going to be there for a while, okay? And there's going to be some tough times. And so just the whole budget situation, I think, is going to drive decisions and drive some of the directions there for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
So this is a new normal that we should all get adjusted to?
I think so. That's my personal view. This is the new normal.
What are some of the things that you as an industry person are trying to do to cope with that idea of a new normal?
We are trying to get more competitive. We have to look at our own cost structures and what we do, and we have to look at how we manage our human capital so that we can, you know, I know it's a cliche, but in the sense we have to look in an environment where we have to provide more with less. And that's the reality.
It's one of the phrases I hate more than just about any phrase in these conversations is that more with less. And I wonder if the phrase I've attached to it from time to time is different with different, because you're talking about redeploying human capital and making sure that it's doing what it's supposed to be doing, and you're changing cost structures. But there are areas we didn't even have a chance to talk about, your cybersecurity practice today. But that's one area where agencies are increasing spending.
Absolutely.
And so there's more opportunity. Yeah,
that's going to continue. And you're right, maybe different with different is better, but we can't keep doing business the way we've been doing it.
I have really appreciated your time today. Enjoyed our conversation. Thank you very much for coming.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks for having me.
Tor Opsahl is Executive Vice President at CCSI, my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This conversation will be archived later this afternoon, and you can hear it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Hour number 2 of In-Depth with Francis Rose is coming in a few moments on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.